Silicon Valley's gender problem exploded into public consciousness in 2017 when Susan Fowler's blog post exposed rampant sexual harassment at Uber. This watershed moment revealed what women in tech had known for decades. Beneath the industry's meritocratic promises lay a deeply entrenched boys' club. Emily Chang's Brotopia arrived at this pivotal moment, documenting how an industry built on disruption had reinforced society's oldest biases. The book's impact was immediate and far-reaching. Salesforce CEO Mark Benioff purchased copies for his entire leadership team, and it became required reading across tech boardrooms. What makes Silicon Valley's gender imbalance particularly tragic is that it represents one of history's great professional reversals. The tech industry wasn't always dominated by men. In fact, the first programmers were women. The transformation from female-friendly field to male-dominated industry didn't happen by accident. It was engineered through deliberate choices that continue to shape tech culture today. Ironically, programming was once considered women's work, mechanical and clerical rather than intellectual. During World War II, six women programmed the Army's first electronic computer, ENIAC, yet weren't invited to the celebratory dinner. Grace Hopper, a mathematics PhD and Navy Rear Admiral, invented the first compiler in 1944, enabling English commands instead of machine code. By 1967, Cosmopolitan magazine highlighted computing as an ideal career for women. As computing grew lucrative in the 1960s, companies developed personality tests favoring antisocial, mathematically oriented personalities typically found in men, creating a self-fulfilling prophecy. The personal computing revolution temporarily reversed this trend, with women reaching nearly 40% of computer science degrees by 1984. However, universities then began restricting admission based on prior programming experience, advantaging boys who had been encouraged to tinker with computers. Women's representation subsequently declined dramatically to below 20% by the early 2000s. Silicon Valley executives often claim to operate a pure meritocracy, yet this claim falters when systems are designed by and for specific demographics. The PayPal Mafia, a group of founders and early employees who gained extraordinary influence, exemplifies this contradiction. Despite championing meritocracy, founder Peter Thiel admits they hired people like themselves, the same kind of nerd who shared an understanding of the world. After PayPal's $1.5 billion sale to eBay in 2002, this all-male network spread throughout Silicon Valley, funding and supporting each other's ventures. Even those who never worked at PayPal benefited from this dynasty, which Yammer co-founder Adam Pisoni acknowledged as a major contributor to the lack of diversity in tech. Ironically, meritocracy originated in Michael Young's 1958 satirical novel warning about new social stratification. By 2000, the concept had lost its cautionary meaning, creating a class who can feel they deserve whatever they can get while becoming insufferably smug. What appears as objective evaluation often reinforces existing power structures, perpetuating the inequalities a true meritocracy would eliminate. Even well-intentioned companies struggle to create inclusive environments. Google actively recruited strong women from the beginning. Susan Wojcicki, Marissa Mayer, and Sheryl Sandberg formed a powerful female leadership trio that created a supportive environment. Larry Page once ordered recruiters to hire 20 female engineers before adding more men and established a revisit committee to review rejected female candidates. Despite these efforts, by 2017, Google's diversity numbers mirrored the industry average. Women comprised just 31% of employees overall and 20% of technical positions. The U.S. Department of Labor found evidence of systemic compensation disparities between genders. Google's initiatives failed because rapid scaling defaulted to standard industry recruiting practices. Heavy reliance on employee referrals perpetuated existing demographics. Most critically, the culture rewarded traditionally male-associated traits like assertiveness, while undervaluing collaboration and listening skills that women often brought to the workplace. We've been telling you this for a long time, and it's not isolated to Uber. When Emily Chang gathered women engineers to discuss Susan Fowler's viral blog post, this was their consensus. Only men seemed surprised by the revelations about systematic harassment. Laura Holmes recalled being choked by a drunk male engineer at a company event who told her, "You're so fucking dumb. The only thing you're good for is being taken out to the back parking lot and being raped." At 23, she stayed silent, fearing retaliation. The 2016 Elephant in the Valley survey revealed the scope. Among 200-plus experienced women in tech, 90% witnessed sexist behavior at industry events, 60% experienced sexual harassment, and 84% were called too aggressive. Women expressed not outrage, but exhaustion from constantly enduring toxic workplace culture. For women of color, challenges multiply. As Leah McGowan Hare put it, "As a woman, I'm thrilled, but as an African American, I'm put out. If you don't address racial diversity, you're going to end up with 50 women and 50 men, 100% white." Venture capitalists control Silicon Valley's lifeblood, money, but their diversity problems exceed those of the companies they fund. Sequoia Capital's Sir Michael Moritz created controversy suggesting his firm couldn't find qualified women without lowering standards, despite himself having only a history degree and journalism background. Despite its innovation focus, venture capital remains stagnant regarding diversity. Women's representation has declined from 10% of partners in 1999 to just 6% by 2014. This matters because VCs provide not just funding, but crucial connections to talent, partners, and exit opportunities. In 2016, male founders received $58 billion, compared to just $1.46 billion for women. Research reveals systematic bias. Investors describe men as young and promising, while women are inexperienced. Studies show investors fund male-voiced presentations 60% more often than identical female-voiced ones. Stitch Fix founder Katrina Lake experienced this firsthand. Despite her impressive background and promising traction, she faced rejection from 50 VCs when raising her Series A, with one dismissing her female-focused business in the first minute. Silicon Valley stands at a critical inflection point. The tech industry's treatment of women has reached a breaking point, with powerful figures resigning amid public disgrace. Women have united through movements like #MeToo, using the very platforms that enabled harassment to create solidarity. At the current pace, gender parity remains generations away. This isn't just a moral failing, but a business blunder. Research consistently shows gender-balanced leadership drives higher profits. Slack demonstrated this by building diversity from the start. By 2017, women represented 43.5% of employees, 48% of managers, and nearly 30% of technical roles. Their strategy made diversity a priority through concrete actions, centering values on empathy, restructuring interviews to eliminate bias, ending intimidating whiteboard coding sessions, diversifying recruiting teams, and rewriting job descriptions to remove male-biased language. The path forward requires both individual and systemic changes. Treating everyone with respect, stopping enablement of bad behavior, demanding CEOs champion gender representation, putting more women on boards, hiring more women VCs, and funding diverse teams. Computer science is increasingly appealing to girls, but we risk repeating history if schools institute requirements that inadvertently favor boys. The next generation of women in tech is coming, with dreams of making a dent in the universe. When they arrive, we must welcome them and transform the valley and the world for everyone.